Chapter 5. While it violated clan decree for Lyndon to follow a path, it was technically allowed for him to study technique manuals. After all, he couldn't actually use the techniques without Madra of a compatible aspect, which he couldn't harvest. Learning a technique outside of a path was like tearing a branch off a tree and expecting it to bear fruit. But this one didn't need any particular aspect, nor did it require him to be of copper level. He turned the first yellowing page, expectation transforming into a hopeful excitement. I leave this manual out of obligation. Any technique deserves to be studied and remembered, in the hope that it may someday spark greater inspiration. Even such a dim spark as this one may one day strike a great flame. The impetus for this technique comes from a longtime rival of mine, a deceitful and cowardly man whose name I will not honor by repeating it here. I bear the great shame of sharing a clan with this man, and thus we have challenged each other many times since our youth. They say that a good rival sharpens a warrior as a stone sharpens iron, but not my deficient opponent. I defeated him handily each time and had no reason to grow in strength or skill. He was a pathetic match. But some scrap of talent must have remained in him, for he developed an underhanded technique that he christened the empty palm. I will not lower myself to attempt the technique on my own, but as I understand the theory, he focuses neutral madra into a simple palm thrust. How he cancels out the aspects of his spirit I have not yet deduced, but the result is undeniable. When his empty palm makes contact with my core, his madra disrupts my own. For a few seconds I am as powerless as a wretched unsouled. Even more so, perhaps, as I can hardly muster the energy to control my own limbs. I tried a series of techniques to defeat him, but each time he managed to land a single empty palm upon my core. Even such as he, with his lack of talent, can lean upon a technique as a crutch. It is thus in desperation that I have developed this defense, and at last rightfully triumphed over him. Should he pass down this empty palm, I can rest at ease, knowing that my future disciples reading this manual may oppose his legacy. Heart of Twin Stars is utterly simple in its concept. You must divide your core in two. Thus, even when one core is disabled through some device such as my rival's, you have a second to rely upon. The observant reader will notice that this does not increase the power available to you. Splitting one's core is a painful process, prone to many risks, though it is mercifully quick. If attacks such as the empty palm ever become commonplace, I wish to leave behind this defense. Here, at last, I leave a record of my journey to split my core, in exacting detail. Be sure to follow my path to the very step, lest you suffer a crippling injury from which you cannot recover. Useless. Heart of Twin Stars was an utterly useless technique, which doubtless explained why no one practiced it. Even if he wanted to split his core in two, Waymon Eri wouldn't have any techniques like this empty palm. He would be just as defenseless as before. The book did include a cycling technique, which would at least work better than his own pathetic foundation method, but he wouldn't see any benefit before the duel. Besides, the cycling technique was designed to prepare him to split his core, which he never intended to do. The Heart of Twin Stars wouldn't even make up for his broken arm, which, even with his mother's scripts, could never heal before he had to fight. His enthusiasm had dimmed, but not died entirely. The technique manual had given him a few other ideas he could try, and maybe a new search tomorrow would reveal more promising results. After locking up the archive, leaving the Eighth Elder drunk on the roof again, perfectly visible, he returned home, cycling his madra according to his new technique. His nerves kept him at it until dawn, and he would have continued except for a brutal hammering on his door.
"Get ready,"
Kelset told him, dressed in the orange shade silk training clothes of a copper ruler. Her copper badge, marked with a scepter, hung proudly in the center of her chest.
"You're training with me today."
Lyndon brought his pack to the Shi family gardens, surrounded by blue mountain roses and tiny clusters of cloudbell, and knelt across from his sister. They faced each other over a stretch of grass. Ordinarily, they would have joined the rest of their family in the main courtyard for daily cycling, but Kelsa seemed to have something else on her mind. She started off studying him, her hair pulled back and face severe.
"You seem tired," she said at last. "You didn't sleep well, which will slow your arm's recovery. What were you doing?"
Over the years, he'd found that the fastest way to deal with his sister was to respond immediately and honestly.
"Cycling. I was trying to process the rest of the fruit."
"And have you?"
"Not fully."
The foreign Madra still crackled like lightning in his core, but less than it had the day before. He couldn't tell how much less, or if digesting it had made any difference at all. This was not the effect he'd ever imagined from a legendary natural treasure. Kelsa cupped her chin in her hand, pondering for a moment.
We'll come back to that. For the moment, we should discuss our strategy in getting you through the duel.
Only 5 days left. Can we? He asked. Her answering glare was as firm as a strike to the chest.
This is our family's honor. If I can't get you to acquit yourself well, I don't deserve my badge.
Lyndon straightened his spine, adjusting for the increased pressure on his shoulders.
Then, where do we begin?
Obviously, there's no good outcome if you fight the girl. You're shamed if you win, and shamed if you lose.
He didn't need a reminder of that, but he remained quiet, waiting for her to continue.
Your only honorable option is to challenge someone of greater standing in the Mon family, like perhaps Waymon Terrace. This has the disadvantage of getting you killed.
That was a slight exaggeration. The Mon family wasn't likely to kill a relative in front of the whole clan. But they could, and honor would require them to injure Lyndon severely, which was another consequence he'd prefer to avoid.
I suggest you fight the girl for a while and then concede. You could say that an unsold is not worthy to fight someone of the Mon family, which gives them face. They'll accept, you'll be embarrassed for a while, but in the end your reputation will improve. You will have handled the duel with grace and accepted defeat with dignity.
At the price of telling the Mon family that I'm worth less than they are. She nodded once.
Yes.
Kelsa never shied away from the truth. Lyndon didn't think of himself as overly prideful, but he burned at the thought of humbling himself in front of all the other Wei families. For one thing, his Shi family would be seen as vulnerable if he publicly demonstrated his weakness. Their rivals would push them, seeking to exploit a perceived opening. After watching his expression for a few seconds, Kelsa folded both hands on her knees.
But I'm sure you didn't waste the day yesterday. What's your plan?
Sheepishly, Lyndon reached into his sling where he'd tucked the technique manual.
I found this technique in the archives. It's not directly useful, but it might have given me an idea.
She snatched the manual from his hand and glanced over the first page.
You want to split your core?
Her tone made it clear exactly what she thought of that idea.
No, of course not.
While cycling according to the method described in the Heart of Twin Stars manual, he'd spent the night thinking. He suspected there were other uses for a split core rather than just defending against one specific technique, but they were too risky or difficult to test.
There's a second technique in there.
Kelsa looked back down at the book.
The empty palm.
It would be easier if I was copper, I know, but in theory, it's just injecting your madra into a certain spot. It could be enough.
She flipped through each page in the thin manual, paying special attention to the back.
It doesn't describe the timing or the energy flow or the foundation you'd need to pull it off. Only how to defend against it.
Kelsa snapped the pages shut.
But ultimately, yes, I think there's enough information here that we could develop a version of the empty palm. It's simple enough anyway.
Lyndon leaned forward, eager.
Can you teach me?
In the Wei clan, most sacred artists reached the Iron Stage in their 21st or 22nd year. For Kelsa to have reached the barrier between copper and iron at the age of 16 meant that she was more than merely talented. She had the discipline and skill to match. Abruptly, Kelsa rose to her feet.
That's up to you. I have some ideas, but I need a living target with a functioning core if I want to try them out. That means you.
You can disable my spirit, but it won't do much. I can hardly defend myself to begin with.
Kelsa stretched first one arm, then the other.
That's not what I mean. The manual mentions that he had to achieve purity for the technique to work. We don't have time for that, so I'll be pushing my madra into your core until I get a feel for the technique.
As a sacred artist on the path of the White Fox, Kelsa cultivated aspects of dreams and light, bent toward the purposes of deceiving enemies. Accepting it directly into his core meant...
I have another idea, Lyndon said, with a half step back. I could try on you first, and we could work from there.
I need to understand the theory myself.
Kelsa said, dropping into a balanced stance on the balls of her feet. Her left hand was extended, her right held back, her whole body angled sideways.
First trial.
Lyndon tried to protest again, but Kelsa unfolded in a deceptively quick movement that left the heel of her palm against his core, just below the navel. She'd used hardly any force, and the strike came with no pain. It felt like a light slap, if anything. But the world went mad. The soft blue cloudbell flowers at his feet took flight, flapping around his eyes.
Shadows in the bushes flickered and giggled, while the clouds zoomed around like zealous fish in the ocean of the sky. Grass tickled his feet through his shoes, and he tiptoed around to avoid it. The ground must not have liked that, because it finally had enough and slapped him in the back of the head. He came to in a wrench of returning sensation, lying flat on his back in the garden and staring up into the sky. His arm had begun to ache again. Over him, Kelsa was flexing her palm.
Too slow. The motion has to carry the Madra. You can't rely on transmission through contact. Stand up, I need to try again.
Linden crawled to his feet, still dizzy.
Wait, I think it's worse on me, because I can't...
She hit him again. After the garden stopped partying without him, he spoke from the ground.
I'm not standing up again. I'm not.
Kelsa was moving at half speed, stepping forward into a slow palm thrust. She repeated the first step a few times, working something out in her head.
Then you'll be worthless for the rest of your life,
she said casually, but the words were like a spear to the ribs.
You don't want to shame the family? Stand up.
She didn't so much as glance at him, as though she didn't care whether he stood or not.
I've almost worked it out. It has to transmit all at once. Not like a stream, but a gust of wind.
Linden stood up again. And again. 11 more times. By the end, the earth never stopped spinning, even when the effects wore off. He tried to rise again, but up and sideways seemed to have swapped places, and he stumbled into the cloud bells. Their stalks were sharper than they looked. Kelsa reached in and hauled him out with ease, steadying him with a grip on his shoulder. 10 breaths passed before he could take a step without swaying.
Rally yourself, she said. Step forward and shove in one motion, focusing Madra in your palm. Release it in one breath like a gust of wind, being sure to exhale and cycle to the rest of your body for stability. Understood?
Linden was trying to determine if his senses were back under control. Was that flickering shadow a sign of lingering madness or a leaf blowing in the wind?
Please, I need a moment.
Kelsa rarely had the patience to wait around, and though she allowed him his rest, she did so reluctantly. She paced in the garden, studying Heart of Twin Stars as she did.
Let's return to an earlier subject, she said, without looking up from the book. The fruit. Have you finished cycling it?
Almost all,
he said, sensing the tingling sparks that lingered in his core.
I haven't noticed much of a change.
She squinted at the page.
I can't see clearly. Bring out your light.
Linden looked around at the bright morning light.
Do you need me to find a healer?
She used the manual to point at his robes.
You're my disciple for the day. Pull out your light.
To his sister, Linden would have protested. To his master, Linden would have obeyed without a word. He spent a few seconds deciding which she was and eventually reached into his pack to produce a palm-sized board. The board was covered with an intricate 3-layered script circle, and when he fed his Madra into it, it burst into white light. The rune light was much stronger than from an ordinary script, and remarkably steady. That was this script's only purpose, to produce light on command. It would last as long as the user's spirit did. Linden held the board over the book with the shining script down, though it made no discernible difference among the bright sunlight. Kelsa didn't thank him, but spoke as she read.
I finished processing the Auris last night. It was quite the experience. Did it feel as though you'd swallowed a thunderbolt? Mine did. But as I continued cycling, I didn't feel much else. It was as though the fruit vanished. I wondered if Mother was mistaken and this wasn't the miraculous spirit fruit she thought.
She looked at him but kept her book open, so he didn't remove the light.
It wasn't until early this morning that I noticed the changes. Tell me, does your light seem brighter than usual to you?
Linden flipped the light over and examined it himself. It was almost impossible to tell how bright it was, especially compared to a memory.
Perhaps a little?
Keep watching until you can see a difference.
Linden knew his sister was headed somewhere with this, and he would exhaust himself eventually. He kept the light ignited, staring into it, looking for the slightest difference in illumination.
He noticed nothing.
Finally, she told him he could stop.
How do you feel?
She asked him.
Absolutely ordinary.
Yet you burned the light for 52 seconds, and you could have kept going. How long could you do it before?
Unlike the brightness question, he could answer this one.
30 seconds at most.
He had used this board to light his way while diving in the river, so he knew exactly how long he could keep it lit. But he must be wrong. When he sensed his core, he didn't feel any stronger.
Are you sure you counted properly?
She snapped the technique manual closed, wearing a pleased look.
The fruit's Madra integrates so smoothly with our own that we don't notice. Yesterday I was copper, and today I'm on the verge of condensing iron, but I don't feel any different. And yesterday, you wouldn't be able to use the empty poem more than once without passing out.
Lyndon's breaths were coming more quickly, and the flowers in the garden suddenly smelled almost painfully sweet.
What about now?
She adopted a low stance, balanced and firmly planted, prepared to be hit.
How should I know? Now, disciple, empty palm.
This time, Lyndon snapped into action as he would for a real sacred arts master. He stepped forward and pivoted at the hips, launching a palm strike at his sister's stomach. Synced with his madra, it should have driven energy through her core like a steel spike, but it splashed like a cup of water instead.
One gust, not a breeze, Kelsa barked. Again.
His head was already light and his limbs weak, but he tried until he passed out. When he woke, he tried again. 4 days later, the most prominent families of the Wei clan gathered once more before the Hall of Elders at the break of dawn. A few industrious sacred artists sat cross-legged in the courtyard, cycling in the first light of dawn. Everyone else stood, eager to watch the show. If something went wrong, an honored family might fall from grace today. The Mon family waited on one side of a cleared space, Eri in front. She hopped in place, practicing attacks on an invisible opponent. Her scowl said she was looking to kill. Keth stood over his daughter, arms folded, scanning the crowd for the Shi family, which was why Lyndon had shown up together with his family. Kelsa and his father walked beside him while his mother kept up as best she could while taking notes. The first elder stood on the stairs of the hall, as he had before, but this time his brow was furrowed in a frown that seemed carved into his wrinkled face.
This is a duel for honor, and so it may continue. But any wounds to the young are wounds to our clan, so I must ask if there is any other way for the offended parties to resolve this.
Eri executed a series of punches that veered ominously low.
No other way,
she declared. Before his training with Kelsa, Lyndon would have agreed with her. He'd seen no other way out. But while practicing the empty palm, he'd been struck by an idea. A terrible idea. He bowed toward the Mon family, bending over his wounded arm.
Honorable head of the Mon family, this one has a request.
Keth straightened his back, responding to Lyndon's humble speech.
I will not release you from the duel.
Lyndon could probably appeal to the first elder on the basis of his injury and at least ensure a little more time. But there was an opportunity here, and if he let his own crippling weakness get in the way of opportunity, he'd never achieve anything.
This one would dare not ask so much. Instead, this one wishes to challenge another member of your family.
Eri's mouth dropped open in a comic show of disappointment, and she turned to her father as though to ask if he could possibly allow this. Keth, for his part, worked his jaw as though chewing the idea over. His eyes roamed to his fur-clad son, Taris, who still sat gingerly after his whipping.
Which would you challenge?
Keth finally asked. Lyndon met the eyes of this grown man more than twice his age, this fighter legendary for his unflinching courage in combat.
I challenge Wei Mon Keth.
He had somewhat expected gasps from the surrounding families, or at least derisive laughter, but the crowd reacted with utter silence. A foundation artist challenging an iron wasn't interesting gossip. It was like an infant trying to bite a tiger. Copper souls could process vital aura, giving them a supply of madra that was both more expansive and more effective. But a quick or clever foundation child could overcome that disadvantage. An iron body was a qualitative difference. Compared to copper or below, irons were superhuman. Wei Mon Keth looked as though he'd lost what little respect he might once have had for Lyndon, but he didn't dismiss the idea out of hand.
Explain.
This one must prove his courage, as must your son, Taris.
A dark cloud passed across Taris' face at even the indirect mention of his cowardice, but Lyndon plowed ahead.
However, the opponent Taris faced was many levels higher than he. It seems only fair that this one should face an adversary as exalted.
This time, a quiet murmur did ripple through the crowd. Lyndon and his sister had spent 2 days making sure their argument was sensible enough that those gathered would have no choice but to take it seriously. Within his sleeves, Lyndon clenched his fists. He was close to the outcome he wanted, but he needed Keth to agree. The head of the Mon family rubbed his short beard with two fingers.
This is a better way to demonstrate courage. What terms would you accept?
Traditionally, the challenged would set the terms, which meant Keth would have been within his rights to set a fight with no restrictions and then knock Linden onto the peak of the nearest mountain. But the other families would have looked down on him for abusing his power against a junior, so he took the honorable course and allowed Linden to define the fight, which was Linden's only hope.
One strike each, if it pleases you. First, you take one strike from this one without defense or resistance. Then you strike me in turn. The first to lose his footing is defeated.
Keth's brow furrowed.
You would be wise to set different terms.
There was precedent for a duel like this, if not one so hilariously out of balance. Jade Elders had once exchanged pointers one blow at a time, with a more confident party agreeing to take the first hit. But this was supposed to look like Linden was throwing himself on Keth's mercy, and he had to hope that the Mon family head would see that.
This one hopes you might hold back when you strike, but at least this one may show that he is not afraid to take a blow.
At last, Keth's face lightened as he understood. Linden was giving him a chance to administer a punishment equal to Terrace, humiliate Linden publicly, and remind people of his own strength in one blow. As long as he didn't kill Linden, he would be seen as both strong and merciful, and he would only gain in reputation.
You're clever, Keth said with a nod. You show courage. I agree.
That was it. The rules of the game were set, all his cards played. He almost couldn't believe that it had gone so easily. He moved away from his family as though he drifted forward in a dream, opposing Wei Mon Keth across the open space in the center of the courtyard. He kept expecting someone from the Mon family to object, but none made a sound. As the first elder ordered them to face one another, Linden's heart pounded on the inside of his ribs. This was his chance, his first real chance since he was 7 years old. It had been a long time coming. So why did it feel too soon?
If none object,
the elder said, almost hopefully. No one did, and the dawn air froze. The first elder straightened his back, sweeping his hand to present the challengers.
Then may this duel begin.
Linden faced Wei Mon Keth, who stood taller even than he was, and twice as wide. The man seemed to take up more of the horizon than Yoma Mountain, looming over Linden and blotting out the rising sun. The older man's arms fell to his sides, leaving his slate-gray robes completely undefended.
The first blow is yours, he said.
He didn't even brace himself as Kelsa had done. And why should he? With all of Linden's strength, he wouldn't be able to tip over an iron balanced on one foot. Linden stepped in, preparing his attack, cycling energy through his limbs to keep them under his control. He felt as though they would shake away from his body. He cocked his upper body, drawing back for a palm strike. As he did, he focused his mudra at the base of his palm as he'd practiced. One pulse, like a gust of wind, but focused like an iron spike. At the copper level, this part of the process would be quick and simpler than breathing. His mudra would have been dense and powerful. As it was, Linden had to focus his entire strength on his palm for 3 breaths of time as he prepared. It was slow, it was clumsy, and it would never work against a prepared opponent. But he wasn't facing a prepared opponent. The empty palm landed accurately, just below Keth's navel, along with an invisible thorn that he drove like a hammer driving a nail. Linden felt his own mudra snapping into the man's core, sensed the shiver of feedback that ran through the spiritual lines that crossed his body like veins. Keth trembled and looked at Linden in shock, but he didn't stagger backwards as Linden had hoped. He hadn't taken a single step. Panic shook Linden even more than the empty palm shook Keth. His empty palm had been perfect. But if Keth didn't lose his footing, it wouldn't matter. Linden would have to take a blow from an iron striker who knew that he'd been tricked. If Wei Mon Keth caved in Linden's ribcage with a fist, he would face no more than a fine.
What have you?
Keth began, but Linden followed up with a second attack driven by all the raw, nerved, terrified desperation in his soul. This one wasn't guided by any technique or sacred art. It was nothing more than an ordinary punch to the gut. Every observer in the crowd would know how useless it was. He would have a better chance punching an iron plate than an iron practitioner. Pain echoed up Linden's knuckles and reached his shoulder as though he really had punched a metal plate. But Keth's breath whooshed out of his lungs. He clutched his stomach and took 2 steps backward, his legs shaking as he tried to stop himself from going to his knees. Except for Kelsa and Linden, every single other person present drew in a sharp gasp.
It sounded like a ghost passing over the crowd. Before anyone could speak, Linden bowed to his still staggering opponent.
This one thanks you for your instruction, he rushed out. You are the victor.
Then he scurried back to his family. He didn't need to win, after all. He only needed to save face. And while he may have been able to endure an attack from an iron sacred artist who adhered to the honorable rules of a duel, he would never survive a blow from an enraged iron with blood in his heart.
Stand where you are, unsouled, Keth roared, and the shout was driven with all the force of his madra and fury.
He straightened, which meant he'd recovered his spirit from the disruption of the empty palm. During Linden's tests with Kelsa, it only took her 4 or 5 breaths to recover, so it wasn't surprising that someone at the iron stage would be even faster. Power gathered around Keth's fist until it was visible, warping the air in a haze that reminded Linden of the attack Taris had used to fell the ancestral tree.
I owe you a strike.
His imagination provided him with an image of his body cracking in half as easily as that tree had, his bones snapping like dry branches. He was relying on someone to intervene on his behalf. His life was in the hands of the crowd, and for a long second, they were all silent. Even his father, Jaran, stared at him in confusion, still too shocked by the events of the duel to do anything to help. To Linden's relief, the First Elder stepped between him and the Mon family head, his long eyebrows and wispy beard flowing in the morning wind.
Wei Shi Linden has surrendered. The duel is over, and you are the victor. Congratulations.
Linden let out a heavy breath, and the sudden rush of relief stole his strength. He half expected to collapse onto the stone at that instant. Even the First Elder's harshest critic could not have found a trace of mockery in his words, but Keth turned to him in a fury.
He cheated. He violated the terms of the duel by striking twice in a deliberate attempt to humiliate me.
For which he deserved to lose, the Elder reminded him, as he admitted his loss.
Keth drew up in absolute rage, swelling to seemingly twice his size.
He conspired to ruin my dignity as an iron.
Jaran's laughter was high and scornful as he hobbled his way forward, leaning on his cane. He'd finally overcome his confusion to side with his son, or at least against an old rival.
Whatever trick a mouse uses, it cannot defeat a lion. If Linden decided to charge you with a spear, what is that to you? His strength should never have been able to harm you, no matter how he cheated. A true warrior of the Iron Stage would not be shaken by a child's punch.
Linden winced and pushed back further into the crowd. He had more or less expected Keth's reaction, but he hadn't anticipated his father making everything worse. His sister caught him by the shoulder as he tried to sneak by.
Well done, she whispered.
She moved in front of him, ready to defend him at need. The madra around Keth's fist condensed into spinning balls of purple-edged white fire. Foxfire was only an illusion of flame. It produced no actual heat, but if it touched flesh, it would burn with the agony of real fire.
I see how the Shi family addresses members of the same clan, Keth shouted, trying to drum up support from the audience. With shame and dishonor. Grant me a contest against Shi Jaran, the one responsible for the unsold, or I will find my own satisfaction here.
The First Elder raised a hand.
Keth, Jaran, I have seen enough. Return to your families. This duel has concluded, and the Mon family is victorious.
A few laughs from the surrounding gallery. No one present believed that the Mon family had won, least of all Mon Keth. By afternoon, there would be a new Mon family myth, the unsold who had struck down an iron. Linden couldn't deny his pride at the thought. When the First Elder turned his head, thinking the matter settled, Keth flowed forward. He must have used some movement technique, because one step brought him before Jaran, his fist cocked back to deliver a blow that shone purple with foxfire. Linden's father raised his hands to defend, but even Linden could tell he'd been caught off guard. His cane fell to the ground as he lifted both hands, his scarred face tightening into a grimace. The scene flickered. Jaran and the First Elder had switched places, and now Mon's flame-wreathed fist was crashing down on the Elder, not the head of the Shi family. Jaran's hands were still raised to defend himself from nothing. For an instant, Linden's mind refused to accept what he was seeing. Had the First Elder switched places with his father in that breath? In a move that seemed slow and clear, but must have taken half a second at most, the Elder held up 2 fingers.
He placed them to the side of Keth's wrist, gently guiding the strike down into the side. Foxfire swished through the air as illusory purple-white fireballs struck the stone, dealing absolutely no damage whatsoever. Jaran lowered his hands, stunned. The First Elder continued his movement, moving his two fingers to Mon Keth's shoulder and pushing down. He didn't appear to exert any effort, but the much bigger man collapsed to his knees, his hands behind his back. The Elder flicked his sleeve, and intricate stone manacles appeared around his wrists. Keth shouted, trying to force his way to his feet, but the First Elder had already placed a hand on the man's hair. A ripple of force disturbed the air as it passed through Mon Keth's body, flattening his clothes and sending a pulse of dirt blasting out. His knees slammed back into the ground, and he resisted no further.
"Wei Mon Keth will be in isolation training for the next month," the First Elder mentioned. "No doubt he wishes to meditate and learn from today's events. During this time, the Mon family will be responsible for him. You are all dismissed."
Linden froze, replaying the scene in his mind. The First Elder was a forger on the path of the White Fox. He couldn't switch bodies. He could only forge deceptions, copies of reality made of dreams and light with no real substance. White Fox illusions had no structure and could not resist the weakest attack. They relied entirely on crafting a perfect appearance. Forgers had to craft their pictures detail by detail. Even the First Elder could never have created an illusion so layered, so complex, as the scene Linden had just witnessed. Could he? Suddenly, Linden found himself unable to tear his gaze away from the First Elder, the man who had directed the entire scene and maintained absolute control the entire time. Even now, as he instructed the Mon family to carry Keth away, he looked no more concerned than a man ordering his breakfast. This was what a real sacred artist looked like. This was the sort of power Linden wanted. The power he would gain on his path.